What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming up on this episode of the Home Assistant Podcast, we're talking 2024.5 and the state of the open home. Just a heads up, in this episode, we're talking about a feature that didn't quite make it out of beta, which is the strict connections feature. So consider this a little preview for 2024.6. Here we go. Hello and welcome to the Home Assistant Podcast. My name's Phil. Filling in for Rohan Karamandi today is my good friend Frank. Hello, welcome back to the podcast, mate.
Hey, it's good to be here once again.
As usual, this episode of the Home Assistant Podcast is sponsored by Home Assistant Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local Home Assistant instance remotely for a small monthly fee that supports the Home Assistant, ESP Home, and probably other 200 projects if you watch the latest live stream. So there's no fiddling with router settings, SSL certificates, or any other YAML. Frank, I was just telling you before, I feel as though I've been watching you for the past 3 days.
Mate. You have to deal with this.
It's all good. It's all good. Like, we had the creators call. It was fantastic to see what's coming out in 2024.5. And then, of course, you know, you're alluding to, you know, the big live stream you had on the 20th of April, I'm going to say.
That was something, huh?
Oh, so I have so many questions. First of all, if you haven't watched, this live stream, at least go and see snippets of it. There's nice chapter marks down on the blog post on homeassistant.io. A little bit different to normal, you know, State of the Union episodes that we've seen previously. A lot more profesh, some may say. Did you actually like? I need to ask. Did you hire like a TV studio or something?
Yes, because we did hire a studio in Utrecht in the Netherlands where we all went.
Yep.
Which had like, for me, this was like a new chapter. This was just amazing. Like, we had like camera crew and like the people behind all the buttons in some kind of like a television room, right? And then like people like count down the fingers and people with makeup running around. And I like, that was just so cool. That was something.
Yeah, like I was going to say, yeah, the production quality on this thing, like for a live stream, was crazy. Yeah, you'd have like, you'd be talking, they'd switch angles. There was like the, focus effects. A whole bunch of little touches there. So
it was just stunning. Yeah, I know. You, like people that are listening cannot see them, so I'm going to show it for people on YouTube. But like you can see the studio in the background, right?
Wow.
With all the lighting and such. Yeah. Well, this was something different. Yes.
So anyway, congratulations. And you were like one of the main events. Like I know Paulus was there giving like keynotes, but yeah, you were hosting all the Q&A panels.
I was doing the co-hosting together with Paulus. Like we did this together. So Paulus was mostly there for, of course, the big announcement and Q&As. And well, we were trying to do like tie everything together basically, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I did the panels, which was something completely different than you as well, by the way. It was really scary, but actually had fun. So that's good.
I mean, it looked like you would have had like the best seat in the house, right? You would have been able to talk to all those interesting people. So for people that haven't watched the live stream, there was people from, you know, like ZBT, MQTT, WLED, like Raspberry, a whole bunch of things. So I think we need to take a step back and let's talk about some of the announcements that came from the State of the Union. Retitled State of the Open Home. So Home Assistant is now owned by a new foundation, the Open Home Foundation. And I think that's so Home Assistant and ESP Home are now owned by a not-for-profit Open Home Foundation. which yep. Paulus is obviously one of the founders of. But it does mean, and this is very interesting, that Paulus can no longer sell Home Assistant. Nabucasa doesn't own Home Assistant. No one, like the foundation that is a not-for-profit foundation, owns Home Assistant, which I thought, wow, like that is, hats off to Paulus. This is his baby, right? And he has decided that, you know what, I'm just going to legally make it impossible for me to sell this and you know, make a bang from, like, make a big buck from this. And he's really like, gone out and said, hey, like, this is it. Like, this is now open source and a not-for-profit owns this. And
it has been a discussion by some parts of the community for years, right? When will it go commercial? And those questions have been asked, especially with Nabucasa now being there, and it goes well. We're growing and the project grows really fast and it's all good and such. But these questions come up, which is totally fair.
Like, yeah, I was going to say they're valid questions, right?
They're valid questions, right? Yeah. And this is the answer. I think it's, I admire what he did there. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, especially being in the smart home space, we've seen this a lot, right? Rug pulls coming from the crypto world, smart home world, right? Like, how many times do we get invested in an ecosystem only for a company to buy it out and then shut it down? But now, Home Assistant safe. Can't happen.
It's just not possible anymore.
Yeah. Yep. So as part of the Open Home Foundation, and I guess you know more about this than me, Frank, but I'm going to try and explain as best as I can from reading the, watching the live stream. The Open Home Foundation has Home Assistant and ESP Home as, you know, the two big projects that are part of the Open Home Foundation. And then there is a whole bunch of other associate projects that have come on board. So things like Zwave.js, WLED, Raspi, and Zigbee to MQTT.
Correct.
You know, what's the real term for them? Are they like contributing?
The collaborative. That's so the they're one. Collaborative. They're collaborative with the Open Home Foundation. They share the same values.
Yep.
And join that effort that the foundation is going for. And besides, like, ESP Home and Home Assistant now being owned, it's not just that. It's like we have a huge collection of libraries as well, right? Like specific drivers that integrate with devices that, for example, are used in Home Assistant. All those libraries are also transferred to the Open Home Foundation, so they're owned by them as well. ZigPy has been donated to the Open Home Foundation.
Nice.
That's a big one, I think. But also the Wyoming protocol, which is used for all the voice stuff, and Piper. So that's the text-to-speech engine that we created. So all in all, like, there's already a really big, solid base at launch, right? There's a lot in there. And the sole goal that this is here is that it's being one, just one unit that strives for those, like, values.
Yeah, fantastic move. And yeah, the whole foundation being, you know, like, yeah, just a single mission. Like, yeah, how do you like orchestrate that in the background? I'm guessing, you know, like, you've got all those, you just mentioned, like, all those libraries, right? How do you say, like, hey, we're going to do this, and if you want to donate your, you know, library over here, like, surely there's got to be, like, and just imagine for one project, all the discussions that would have to happen, you know, what's going to happen in the situation.
Just ask. No, but most of them were already owned by the Home Assistant project or the Home Assistant Lips project on GitHub, at least. So it is already part of the Home Assistant organization. So that is just transferred over. And the other cases, it's just ask.
Yep.
Right? It's just talk about it. And I'm sure more will follow. Like, there has been a lot of organization around this for a long time. Like, this is not something you wake up in the morning and like, well, let's create a nonprofit and let's be done. This is like a lot of thinking about messaging. What does it mean? What does the statute say in the foundation? Where do you make such a nonprofit foundation in the world, right? It's, by the way, based in Switzerland, for example, because that, like, is the most strict and what we looked for in what this all is and means. But also, just like setting up this live stream, just that, right? And it's like that it is so much work, and we have so many people worked on this so hard for a long time. It's crazy. To give an idea how long this is in the works, on our 10th year anniversary, we changed the Home Assistant logo, right?
Yep.
And that changed with the three dots inside the logo. Instead of the big antenna, there was like a smaller or a bigger antenna that had only three nodes on it. And those are three nodes stand for like the values of the Open Home Foundation: privacy, choice, and sustainability. So at that point, that was already in place. We already knew, like, the Open Home Foundation logo is also based on the Home Assistant logo. This has all like been in the making for a long time.
And yeah, as you said, like legal stuff, yeah, I'm sure this was not like something you could just switch on and...
Nope.
Yeah.
So many people have worked on this for a long time.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. Yeah.
Fantastic. So of course, Home Assistant, Nebuchadnezzar being the partner, the main partner of the Open Home Foundation now. Mm-hmm. When you have your Nebuchadnezzar subscription, Nebuchadnezzar is now required, or somehow, however the foundation is set up, I believe, by reading the website, to financially and non-financially contribute things to the Open Home Foundation. Non-financially, for example, Nebuchadnezzar, via its subscriptions, pays for someone to work on ZWave.js full-time, and that is then contributed to the Open Home Foundation. So, pretty cool. And also leaving the door open for other projects, other companies, anyone else that wants to join.
Definitely.
Fight that mission. Yeah. I'm excited to see, when that happens, right? Partner number two comes on. It'd be amazing.
This will take time to settle. I'm curious to see how it pans out for the future. Mm. But the most important takeaway right now is that, I think the best takeaway right now is simply that both Home Assistant and ESP Home are now open source and nonprofit forever.
Yep, definitely. Okay, so also on the Home Assistant front, it was really cool, Frank, to see you doing the update for Home Assistant, as a head of engineering. But one of the interesting stats I took away from your little announcement spiel.
The big number.
1 million homes that you've extrapolated out using Home Assistant. Wow.
It is insane, right? It is an estimate. Don't get us wrong, right? It's based on our public analytics and based on our download statistic. We extrapolate that we are well over 1 million. So that we've crossed that is just that number is staggering. I don't know what to do with it. Just feels so how can you even explain or think about how many of people doing stuff? I don't know. It's just, for me, it's mind-blowing.
And so what, you've got 1 million homes. So then what, let's say an average of 3 point something people per home. So Home Assistant is directly affecting 3 point something million lives on the planet, at any given time?
Something like that, right?
That's crazy to think about. And also,
I'm pretty sure that when Paul has made his first commit in 2013, he would not have been that was not his goal expected that to happen. No. And that realization, that's a big thing for him and for me too, right? I started in 2017 and it was just fun, and it still is fun, but it's definitely more serious fun, right? And definitely bigger use right now. So that's it's a huge number. It's very impactful for everything we do.
So
it's a crown, basically.
Yeah. I was staggered by that number. But once again, it's working, right? And there's subscriptions helping the go forward, and amazing. So in terms of the fun stuff that came out of this, and I got to say, shout out to everyone at Nebuchadnezzar that helped out. It was good to see, so many faces on the live stream as well. I got to love Mike's jacket that he was wearing too, you can dress up for the occasion.
He told the story on stream too, I think, right? He did on his opening, at least that he did during practice. That was just, as you notice, I haven't looked at myself either, by the way, yet. I don't know. I've watched it. I've watched there, but not looked back yet.
So there's going to be some updates regarding Home Assistant hardware. First of all, the Sky Connect, which is the Zigbee adapter USB stick that has been announced, that is for sale. It's going to be renamed Home Assistant Connect, and then it's got some random. I forget. I've was hunting for it in the game. It's like, it's got a code number against it. But essentially, if you've got Sky Connect, it's just a rebrand with a new logo. I remember this isn't Connect, Zigbee adapter, which is cool. And it looks like
ZD1, I believe.
Yeah. And there's going to be, in the future, there's going to be some hardware for Z-Wave, which is going to be exciting. Like,
yeah, there were some little spoilers in that stream, right?
Yeah.
Which were really well, like, hidden as normal, just going to happen. But yeah, some of those were a big deal. And this is a big deal. We're doing the rename to Home Assistant Connect to be able to support more more of these sticks, like those radio sticks, to release in the future. And Z-Wave is one of them. We're working on that one.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's fantastic. And for Home Assistant Cloud, there's going to be some new features coming through as well. So two-factor authentication, I believe, is being actively worked on or very close to coming along. One thing I'm very excited for as a Nebucasa subscriber is encrypted cloud backups. I think backing up has always been, you know, a pain, right? And it just makes perfect sense for Home Assistant, like, to be able to offload that up to the cloud. Seems pretty simple enough. So
we're used to it, right? With your phones, for example.
Yeah. So, like, why not? Remember the joys of buying a new phone and then you go, oh, I've got to set up all my apps again. You know, I've got to get my ringtones. And then now it's just like
a horrible experience to get all your contacts from A to B, like all the phone numbers and such.
But now, like, there's no fun in it. Like, you just put in your password and even the apps go back in the exact same position as your old phone. And you're like, oh.
You're like, yeah, it's a phone.
Yeah, it's a phone. It's my same phone. Like, everything's the same, but just a different case on it.
Unless you bought the iPhone 15, it has this beautiful like button on the side, which I've not understood yet. But yeah, it's the same deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an experience we want to, by the way, then, I guess.
You reckon?
Yeah, I think so, right? That's the idea. Like, if you go to a different device and you could just log in and restore, that would be amazing, right?
Yeah.
It would be the same boring experience as phones, but it's a good one.
Yeah. Just remap where all your USB radios are mapped to or something, and then away you go. And actually on that, I think we, it may have been touched on as one of the questions in the Q&A, was the ability to reconfigure devices and services. Because one of the things I've really found frustrating is I moved my Z-Wave JS instance to a different host and not being able to change, you know, the IP address or where that was. I was like, oh. And now I actually had to go into like the storage folder and, you know, go into, but I believe that's now, you know, a feature that is rolling out as integration
and
support.
We've been rolling it out last release, actually, but we haven't really, or at least I haven't put it into the release notes much, because like telling people you can now reconfigure stuff, but there's no integration that supports it yet is kind of weird at times, right? And but they're slowly rolling out. I've seen an integration or 10 or something this release. So we will see a reconfiguration button on the integration pages now.
I like it. Just those little things I like. Makes the whole thing more polished. So something else coming for Home Assistant Cloud in the future, cloud monitoring. Things like email alerts that Nebucasa, you know, has detected your local Home Assistant instance is down. It can send you an email saying, hey, if maybe you're away from home, you're on vacation. Home Assistant can say, hey, it's not working. What's going on? And I'm guessing there's tools there, you know, potentially reboot it or, you know, turn on cloud access again. Who knows? But yeah, I thought that was a little exciting.
I think it's a nice little touch to have a notification when you're not at home.
Yeah.
In general, like something is wrong.
And particularly like when Home Assistant is being, you know, tied into like security systems or is the security system of your home, right? In terms of new Home Assistant features, you know, teased for the long term, so definitely not in 2024.5, but the voice assistant's going to be able to get timers, reminders, and music controls. I think this is something that I've personally been holding on to my little Amazon Echo for, but, you know, timers, reminders, yeah, like just simple core actions that those smart speakers can do. It's going to be fantastic. So great to see that, you know, Nebucasa and Home Assistant team are aware, you know, that we need those. We're obviously excited for voice satellite hardware. I'd like to see, you know, how that looks. I hope it's going to be home approved. I know there was a whole home approval factor that I think Paul has had at one point in his newsletters about, you know, it needs to look nice in the home, right? It can't just be an ESP device with wires sticking out. And some better onboarding for voice people. Like, you know, because right now I think it's very janky, developer focused. So yeah, I think some onboarding.
That's how it starts, right?
That's so it.
That's good. And we now start starting to refine that from a UX perspective, but also like if you want to do hardware, things need to be working, like onboarding should be easy.
Yeah.
This also has been visible when we launched the Blue a few years ago. We changed the way Home Assistant onboarded in itself and how it could never crash, right? And things like that, how it would always come up, even though it's in safe mode or whatnot. You could always restart and don't have to worry about a YAML typo or things like that. Like that's stuff from the past. That's all things that we worked on at the time when we did the Home Assistant Blue. And now we're looking at voice, a hardware thing. We need to make sure that that has a good experience too, right? You should not be able to mess it up. It should be a couple of clicks to engage with it and things like that. And so this is a good next step.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now everything is in place.
What else is happening in, like, you're going to be building more live streams now, I'm guessing. Have you got topics for those, or are they just going to be like general, or what's...
So, we always had the year off, right? We had the year of the share love and year of streamlining experiences, year of the voice, the most recent example. But we didn't really settle on a year off this year. There are more chapters to solve and more things to work on and not solely focus on one thing. So there's a broader spectrum like dashboarding, automations from Home Assistant side, but also Home Assistant Cloud, as we just mentioned. But what else we want to focus on is a little bit, if this might be a year of something, then it might be the year, which is not official by the way, but this might then be the year of the live stream or something. Because we are trying to go and focus on more community focused, more topic focused live streams as well. We want to do more of those in-depth live streams and give more time on a specific subject. Like our live streams for our release parties will stay there. They're very fun to do and interact and tell about what's in the release. But we had a live stream on Meta recently, for example, and we did a deep dive there. We had some streams about voice last year, which were very well received. People enjoyed those a lot. And we want to do more of these. We recently did dashboarding. We might do something on automations or some in-depth knowledge on the scripting or templating or, I don't know, Q&A sessions or things like that. We want to do more specific ways and more specific subjects that might interest people and addressing more people that way.
Yeah.
Tickle their interest.
Absolutely.
And learn.
Yeah. And I think like the engagement I saw on the replay of the live stream too, just like, you know, people commenting, asking questions, like, it's great, right? Like it really drives community engagement and gets, you know, people going to access to the people behind the features, right? And making decisions. So yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, that's what the community is about, right? Home Assistant is created by the community. It is. It doesn't matter how you turn it. We are not able to make, like last release was 1,600 changes. We're not able to create 1,600 changes with just what we work at Nabucasa. It's the community that builds it. It's a community that helps each other out. It's a community that delivers support. It's the community that teaches each other and that more.
And you did all this, you know, open home, open foundation stuff. And of course there was a release that somehow has dropped that, right?
Yeah, that too.
So I guess that's where we should talk about. So anyway, 2024.5, congratulations on the Staley Open Home, Frank as well, and Paulus and everyone there, Madalena. I saw like, a lot of effort to go through, but we do need to talk about 2024.5 because it's not a great release. Very good release. One thing I'm really excited for, and it's probably the headline feature, is the new strict connections that are coming in to your Home Assistant instance. So it's a new security feature ensuring that accessing your Home Assistant instance remotely is even more secure. When enabled, Home Assistant will only accept clients that have already been authenticated. So if you're trying to access your local Home Assistant instance outside of your local network and you're using your mobile app that's already been authenticated, no problem. Home Assistant will allow you in. But if you haven't done that before, so it's you're logging in from a new browser or a new app for the first time, the connection is going to be denied. And there's no ability, and Frank can probably correct me if I'm wrong here, but there's no ability at all to log in, right? I think if you're using Home Assistant Cloud, it's just going to drop your connection and say, nope, too bad, too sad.
Nope.
You need an access token or something. To log in as a new device, you'll need to either be on the local network or you'll need to get a temporary link, which is generated with someone with administrator access. I'm guessing that administrator person needs to be on the local network. Fantastic.
No, they need to be able to log in. Be able to access their system.
This might be a good question. If I'm an administrator and I'm outside of the network, can I call that? Mm-hmm. Can I generate a token without even being on the local network? Fantastic. All right.
Yep.
That's good. So then if I've got an app that I just need to log in with the browser for whatever reason on the phone, I can do that. Mm-hmm. That's cool. So there's two modes to this new strict connections, guard page and drop connection. I'm guessing the guard, can you explain, Frank, the difference between those?
So this feature is basically sort of firewall, right? It just, if you turn it on, you can only access if you have the right password, basically, right? Mm. You have the access token, then you come by. But if the mode is set to guard page, which is the first mode, then you will be served a page with telling you, you have no access. There's just the Home Assistant logo with a board telling you, you have no access, with a button to learn more, which will redirect to documentation telling you about this feature. The cool or the nice thing about this is the user-friendly way, because when you access your instance remotely, unexpectedly, and you're like, why is it not responding? Well, it tells you why. It tells you you're not logged in. You cannot access it right now. And you need to have like a temporary login URL from your administrator. The drop connection mode, however, is a little bit more strict, because it will not tell you that. It will just cut off the connection. It will just drop it and wish you a nice day. Basically, it's like nothing is there. And at that point, that is probably from a security perspective, a little bit better choice. But if you're talking about home approval factor, right? If my wife would visit that, for example, and she will get no connection, then she would be like, it's down or it's not working and things like that, versus, oh, I have no access and I need a URL. So there's more explanation to it. The guard page is more UX friendly and user friendly, while the drop connection might be the more stricter one, because you have no clue what is happening on the other end, right? The guard page will show you Home Assistant logo. You will know I've reached an Home Assistant instance, while the drop connection doesn't work that way. It does show you nothing. You have no idea what's going on there. So that are the two different modes. And it's a choice between, do you want a little bit more security or still some UX balance, right? And I think the guard page is a good balance between UX and security in a way.
Yeah. Yep, I agree. So this is available for Nebuchadnezzar Cloud subscribers and also available for self-hosted people. So if you're not a subscriber or you still have, your random DuckDuckGo or DuckDNS, whatever they're called, self-hosted domain, you can use this feature, no problem. Yep. I think if you're a self-hosted user, you'll need some YAML config added in. There's no UI for it at this stage. But I think one of the things we caught out on the creators call the other day was that for additional services that might have ingress, if you've got the SSH add-on, this won't protect those services. It's only going to protect the Home Assistant UI.
So everything that's inside the UI of Home Assistant via an add-on that uses ingress, right? Like you have the web terminal or if you use the Node-RED add-on, it will load Node-RED inside Home Assistant. Those will be protected. That's part of it. But if you have a secondary application that runs on its own port and its own service besides Home Assistant, that is something we cannot control. So if you're talking about pure SSH session, we are not able to control that with this feature.
Yeah.
No. But that's also something that's not going through the Home Assistant Cloud, for example. So for those users, this has been brought into the UI fully, because we can control it there fully. We can give you the controls that behave expectedly in an expected way, right? We can predict that how it works. But for people that are using it on a self-hosted environment, that becomes a little bit more tricky, right? We have to deal with things like reverse proxies, for example, and how those work, and are they configured correctly? So the setting of the strict connection mode you're in, like the guard page or the drop connection mode, is next to the reverse proxy settings in YAML as well, because you need to configure those correctly too. The documentation will warn you about that.
Fantastic. Well, I think I always love security updates. I mean, Home Assistant, so yeah. I think this is a great little addition.
One cool side effect to this is that if you enable this mode, for example, the guard page mode, the WW folder, which used to be always public, will no longer be public either. They will be protected by the same strict connection guarding. So if you have like your own, I don't know, some people store specific audio files or images there that they use in their dashboards and such, they can now be like firewalled a little bit more too.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Actually, that's a really good side effect of that. Says, pictures, you know, a whole bunch of junk that we don't necessarily need exposed from that.
Exactly. And once the guard page or the connection drop comes in, there's no way to access login. There's no way to access APIs or anything else. It's just that little static page that is served constantly. And that's the only thing it does. There's just basically almost no attack factor there. And besides that, we did recently this curiosity on the logins page of Home Assistant, right? It's not that our login page is insecure. We have done two audits, security audits. One is done by the GitHub team, right? And the other was done by the security company we hired. And both of them have been very good. We've invested very, very valuable time in this to make sure this is all good. And it is. It is just more security added to it, which is just another layer. I think it's great to have more layers.
And making it easy for people to use it, right? I don't think it can never have too much security. Exactly. And as long as it's easy, right? No. Want to tell me about data tables? Because I think that's got a really big update this time. Like,
well, we've seen the big update last release, right?
Yeah, I mean, but you just... It just like even gets better.
So it does get better this release. But last release, we did the data tables, like with the whole categorization and labels and such. We needed a new way to navigate our data. And all the tables you see in Home Assistant have been updated, which is amazing. And the response to it was lovely. Thank you all, by the way. It was good to see to see that work paid off. But there were a lot of comments on like, it would be nice if we could do this, and it would be nice if we could that. And we expected that. Like, this is the first thing we try to ship, as always with Home Assistant, and iterate after that. This is one of those cases. We've iterated on the data tables this release. So, to sum them up, some have asked if I group something in the new data tables, for example, automations that are on, off, and group them. I would love to be able to collapse those groups.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been added. You can now collapse and expand those groups individually, which is super helpful if you have big lists in there. So that's good. Another one is I want to be able to select multiple devices and assign them all to an area.
This is a big one.
That's like, a big one. Yes.
I couldn't believe it wasn't there. Like, I'm like, oh yeah, I think I needed to.
No, it is.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's fantastic. Like, just multi-select, add to an area. And I'm guessing you can then do other things like labels and groups and
Those that were other already there last release, right? And then people were like, okay, that's cool. I can now assign multiple things, a label to multiple things at once and put a whole bunch of things into a category, but why can I not assign it to an area? Which was a valid question. So,
now you can.
Brum to the rescue, it's been added. That's absolutely lovely. The entities page, if you go to the entities page, like if you go to devices and service in the settings menu and then click on the entities tab, you get a huge list. And we have the new data tables in there too, to filter and such. We now added a way to group by domain there. So you have all your lights grouped together and all your switches and alarm control panels and whatnot, which is helpful in a way, maybe if you want to approach the data that way. But while we're at it, we also added it as a filter. So you can now filter down all your entities by saying, give me all my light entities. And then, I don't know, filter even further by floor or area or whatever else you want to filter down on. But being able to just filter by the domain of the entities, I think, is helpful.
Definitely. Also love it now stores the last grouping. And if they were, collapsed or not, like, yeah. That's a nice little touch, right? Because I'm always going back and forwards and then I've got to do that all that filtering again, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, it remembers how you sorted it and what you've collapsed and how you grouped it. That it will remember. So if you navigate away and come back or reload or whatnot, it will still be in that same way. A follow-up question I've seen already happening during beta, what about filters? That's a good question. We have discussions about it. We have resolved that problem on when do you store filters? Do you want to be able to maybe bookmark them in the future? Or maybe you want to like store presets for them or things like that. So there were some discussions around filter setups. For now, we have left it out. We will probably, hopefully, for next release, have a solution for that because we've figured out one, but it didn't make it. So that one is coming too. That's in a pipeline. Little spoiler.
I wonder, like from memory, doesn't the developer tools, like if you filter on a entity in there, it remembers that? Like consistency, you might.
So the developer thing? Tools is basically developer tools, everything you see in the developer tools, by the way, is generally not bound by any UX or design principle or
interesting. Okay.
Or anything at all. Like there's really old code to be found in there. And it's basically like it is a developer tool. We also approach it as such. The table in the developer tools for all the entities is, for example, really slow. If you have thousands of entities, that page is not funny. It will just try to load them all. While if you go to devices and service and list the entities, it will only render and show the entities that are actually shown in your browser window in the actual view you have. That is way more optimized. So the developer tools probably breaks a lot of our design principles and whatnot. So maybe it remembers something. I don't know. Could be.
Maybe it's just the force of habit. I always just straight into developer tools, right?
Really?
I find the devices and services and devices and entities list. Yeah, just too many clicks. Developer tools, states. All right, here we go. Bam, here's what I want.
Really? I just always type C from command on my keyboard and then type entities and hit enter.
Wait, yeah, that
I navigate with my C key, the quick nav bar.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Well, there you go. I only use that to control entities. I didn't realize I could, I just haven't been bothered to.
You can navigate with C,
Oh, there you go. One of the cool things about this release, though, is there's now the ability to create helpers from the automation and script editors. So if you are in a middle of creating the best automation of your life and you go, I need a toggle switch right here. I need a guard here that I can say, yes, needs to go into this flow, not.
Yeah,
you no longer have to
input switches, right?
Yeah, you can just, you don't have to back out, create someone in another screen, then open up where you were left off. You can now do it. And it just flows nicely. Which is, great.
So what happens if you add like an action to your automation? You're like, I want to start a timer. And then you realize I need this. I don't have this timer.
I
need to create a helper, right? And then you're opening up a second tab or navigate away, losing your automation accidentally or things like that, right?
Yeah.
It's just freaking annoying. But now if you add a timer, you said start timer, if you set that as an action and you want to select one, there's none there, but it also has a button to add a new timer directly from the automation editor. You fill in like a name and such. It will create the helper on the helpers page. You can later find them just as the other place where you normally would find them and will be just be added to that automation. It's such a nice touch, which has been contributed by Carwatts, also known, that's his name, Carwatts. His name is Tim, I believe. He has been around for this quality of life improvements quite a lot. And this is just another one of Tim's quality of life improvements. It's a good addition.
Yeah, I love it. I don't know what much to say about this one, but Lock's now supported on the tile card. So, thank you.
Big fan, tile card. It's awesome. Yep.
It is.
We want to give our thanks this episode to Factor. If you haven't heard of them, Factor makes ready-to-go meals that are fresh, not frozen. Their meals are chef-crafted and dietitian-approved. Best of all, they're ready to go in 2 minutes. That really helped because my last couple of weeks have been really hectic and we've been eating out a lot, which started to add up. Doing the math, Factor was less expensive and way healthier than eating out. Every week, you get over 35 options to pick from, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto, and Vegan choices, and more than 60 add-ons to keep you going all day long. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. If you want to try it yourself, head to factormeals.com/homeassistant50 and use code homeassistant50 to get 50% off at factormeals.com/homeassistant50. You get 50% off. Hey everyone, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about the Eufy Video Lock. It's a smart lock that's really easy to set up with just a Phillips screwdriver and no extra drilling. It's got a keyless entry, so you don't need to worry about fumbling with the keys when your hands are full. Also, you don't need to worry about handing out extra keys when you're in a pinch, your kids losing them, or people copying the key and passing it around to each other. Something else I like about the Eufy Video Lock is that it has a camera built in and it works as a doorbell as well. Personally, I think the Eufy Video Lock is great for apartments or cottages where you can't necessarily add extra holes for a video doorbell. My favorite part about it, though, is that there isn't a monthly fee and your recordings are locally stored, so you don't have to worry about someone else owning your doorbell data. You can find it on Amazon, or if you want to know more, search Eufy Video Lock, that's E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
There is also, and I'm going to need your expertise on this one, Frank, but there's new debug mode for integrations. So we can now, this new debug mode is going to apparently detect thread safety issues, which might make Home Assistant unstable. So previously, these thread safety issues in the integration may have crashed Home Assistant. Now Home Assistant will raise an issue with stack traces, and then you can raise an issue and on GitHub, I'm guessing, get it addressed. You know, if it's a custom component, reach out to whoever it is on the hacks repository, or raise it with the core team and get it, you know, addressed there.
Yeah, so it now protects you against like things that happening that custom integrations do that shouldn't be allowed. We catch these things normally in our reviews and our testing, but with a custom integration, that's not there, right? So Bidraco created a couple of layers here that is able to detect this and report this. And what it does, it indeed shows like a whole technical stack trace of what's happening. Where is this call coming from? Why is this happening? Where in the code is this actually happening? That's not good. And who is causing this and what's causing this, which is a whole technical blurb, which most people probably are like, what the hell is this?
Nobody good. Get rid of it. Yeah.
This is probably not good, but it ends with, okay, you should report this with this custom integration author. You can find his issue tracker here. We know where the issue tracker of a custom integration is because that's part of the manifest of custom integration. So we redirect you to that place. You should paste that blurb you've seen and report it to the custom integration author so they can fix it, because this is definitely just an issue. And the fact that we're now able to detect these will make Home Assistant just better over time. Right now, we're running the beta while we're recording this. We've seen quite a few integrations that have issues with this, which on one hand is annoying that people will probably all report this. But on the other hand, if we get through this, then we all benefit from a faster and more stable system. So I think this is a good direction to go into. This debug mode can be enabled in YAML if you want to like go more extensively. But by default, we have some detections enabled for custom integrations always. So we handle custom integrations now a little bit different, simply because we don't have that reviews process in there.
I'm going to ask, like, what, before this new debug mode was available, were you getting any statistics or any reports like about these issues happening? Like, could you then use this data point to say, actually, you know, we're getting a lot of issues from custom components causing these thread safety issues. Let's
we could
do this.
Ask people to run a profiler and things like that to figure out where it's coming from, but that's not an easy process. It's not easy for the user. It's not easy to dive into either. So we do see some of those things happening. That's why we often say, like, try to disable custom integrations to see if problems go away. If that's the case, you know, it's somewhere else. And there's not something we can help you with. And this just helps with both, right? We still can help you now.
Yeah.
I think that's the big difference.
It helps identify where the issue is. Like, because I guess before you didn't know, is it an us problem or is it something that you're running or, how do we help identify that?
And from a user perspective, it's annoying to be or having to go into like deep technical debugging sessions, which shouldn't be necessary. And that's now just so much easier. Like, you still get gobbledygook, which you cannot read or probably don't understand, but still, you know where to go and just hand over that like a piece of ramble you see on your screen.
That's it. Yeah. MQTT is now a platinum integration. Can you tell me, Frank, what qualifies MQTT to now be a platinum integration? What changed to get
it's
it
now
to
async.
Okay.
It's not fully async. So that's cool. And that makes it just faster. And that's the last bit that was missing.
Yep. And for the uninitiated, for those who want to know what async, like, what's that doing under the hood to make it faster? Like, does that mean it's not going to block anything from running? Like, how can you describe that?
It doesn't. That's the whole thing, right? So you have, how do you explain this in a non-technical way? Sync and async is really, it's like a telephone conversation. You have, I think the best way to explain this is like if you had a walkie-talkie back, like when you were young, right?
Yeah.
You had those buttons on the side. You would press those and then it would say bleep and then you could talk. And then you said over and then you let go of the button. And then the other one could talk, right? You could only talk one at a time, basically. That's a really sync, like one at a time and turn by turn, basically. Async is still similar like that, but it's more of like, okay, he has nothing to say, so the other one can go automatically. And
yep.
It feels like more things are happening at the same time. It's not fully true, because if it would be, then it would be threading. But if MQTT has nothing to do at some point of time, some other process may come in and continue while we're keep waiting for MQTT stuff to come in. And while that comes in, it gets scheduled to do its stuff. So it's not blocking each other. It just puts it on the side and then continues doing something else until MQTT has something to do. I think that's the most simplified explanation I can come up with on the spot right now. So I hope it's sufficient.
But at least now, but that was enough to push it over. So, yeah, and Platinum, I'm guessing, is the best tier integration you can get in Home Assistant. There's nothing higher than Platinum, is it?
Nope. Platinum is the highest tier. We had Eric has done a lot of MQTT work back in the day, and Jan has been on it, Jan Bauhaus, for years now, to make it like the highest possible integration that is there, and that's now reached. The last push for async was driven by Bitraco recently, and Jan processed it, and we're now there. It's awesome.
That's great. Another related note, I noticed like if you've been using own tracks or something, you know, I don't know how I signed up for this, but Cloud MQTT has shut down its servers. I think must have been a testing server or something. Sad to see it go. It was my first first foray into MQTT. Before I wanted to start my own home broker or anything.
Why would you use some cloud MQTT?
So OwnTrax is a app that allows you to publish your location through MQTT, right? Mm-hmm. But before the days of Nabucasa and, you know, running, you know, I didn't have a static IP address. I needed an MQTT server online on the internet that could then push it out, right?
That's a good use case.
Yeah, and I'm guessing, like, I think there was some guides back in the day, you know, like everyone's like, just use Cloud MQTT. The number of messages that you'll send for own tracks, pretty low anyway. You won't, you know, go over their paid threshold. But unfortunately, it's shutting down, which, you know, a bit of nostalgia for me. Oh, that was my first, you know, MQTT, right? Like, it's going. It's sad.
It looks sad.
I'm hoping that a few Home Assistant users won't be affected, but a little PSA from me.
It's kind of hard to keep that as a model up, I guess.
I'm guessing, but I do see like a lot of like hardware now, like even like Dyson fans, right? They've got a little MQTT broker in them, so it's like popular. It's just
it's a really lightweight message broker, right?
Yeah.
That's what it is, and that. Just works. It's good at that, by the way. I'm not a fan of MQTT, which is pretty much publicly known. I do use it. I think it's a great protocol, but not for everything. I don't know. It's good. I think it makes a lot of sense as a message broker.
Yep. All right. Sending and receiving voice assistant audio via ESP home devices is now going to be using a native API. Got a bit technical for me, but apparently there was some issues using the UDP server. It was dropping some audio, which means Home Assistant wasn't knowing what you were saying properly. So now there's a new API. I think that's going to be a good improvement.
Using TCP, and it doesn't lose any packets. So if you had some cutoffs in the beginning, in the end, or things like that, then that is now gone. So much better. It's fast. It's just there. It just works.
Mm-hmm.
Good improvement.
Very good.
I've seen some video by JLo the other day. I'm not sure. It probably will go out any other day now. Maybe I will add it to the release notes or something. But I see some effort in like showing the before and after and what the difference is. So hopefully we can get that one out soon to illustrate this.
Yeah. In the next installment of I Can't Believe It's Been Taken This While to Get There, you can now custom display names for energy devices on the energy dashboard.
This is another one of Carl Watts' contributions. This is another quality of life improvement provided by Tim. Awesome. You can just change the name. It's that simple.
It's no more awesome. Like energy watts, blah, blah, blah. And like, yeah, no, get rid of that.
Yeah.
Love it. Yep.
Yep.
I really wanted to upgrade to the beta. I haven't had a chance to upgrade to the beta because I wanted to look at the new visualization graph enhancements for ZHA. I've always found that little graph, like I just love seeing the connectivity between all the devices, where the issues are. I want to see this new enhancements, but no, I do love that there's at least some love being shown to things like, you know, these visualization graphs, because it's not stuff that you use every day. It's usually when you've got an issue, you have to go in and look at things, and then you find that's where things are untouched, right, or unloved, because no one's going in there on a regular basis. So I appreciate that someone has gone in and made an update for this.
Made a better graph. Yeah. So what it does, it shows better colors between the different nodes, basically, right? Between the device and a coordinator, or between devices, connections between that, because it's a mesh network, right? So it will show you better colors there. And I believe it now changes the distance between nodes based on their connection quality, which means that if devices are put further apart from each other, often the distance is bigger. So the graph would show a better picture of the reality, basically. So that's one of the things. And I believe they added something with areas to show areas there too. But then again, I'm not a ZHA user, so I actually don't know.
Well, it makes sense, because I don't know if you've used like ZWave.js, but the, in that system, you can also, like, it has its own areas or rooms or wherever the grouping is there. And when you use a visualization on ZWave.js, similar thing, right? It will group by the area that a device is marked against. So
That's in ZWave.js UI.
Yeah, exactly.
That's also helpful.
Yep.
Yeah, it's similar.
All right. New integrations. Ambient Weather Network, the cloud version, is now available. So if you have an Ambient Weather Network compatible weather station, and it perhaps doesn't have a local API that can be accessed by Home Assistant, but you can push it up to the cloud, you can now then fetch that data down from the cloud and put it into your Home Assistant instance.
Get your local data via cloud.
Yeah.
That's so weird to say.
I know, right?
Wow.
But then, you know, like the amount of devices we have that are cloud-based, you know, that's exactly what happens, right? Like you turn off a...
Well, at least you can get to your data, right?
I think
that's a good part of this. Like you could argue about the cloud, but at least it's done in a way that you can access your data. That's good.
And who owns the data if it's up on their cloud server? Yeah. Arvi, I'm not sure the connect what the correct pronunciation is for that one, but an air quality sensor now available in Home Assistant. This is the most random one I like. The Energini power sockets, which are USB connected power sockets.
Power sockets, yes. You have to connect them to your Home Assistant instance via USB, and then you can like control them. And this is maybe it makes sense in the utility closet or server room where you store your Home Assistant instance and connect some devices to it or something. But otherwise,
I'd really like to know, like, when they were designing these power sockets, like, what particular use case they were trying to solve that they knew that whatever would connect via USB to control it would be within, you know, USB cable length away from it, right? That's not the thing that's plugged into it to begin with, right? Because if you kill the power to yourself, then how are you going to turn itself back on?
You know what it is? Somebody has a use case for it, and it's satisfied. So if you're having one of these things and you're like, oh, that's cool. Now I can hook it up and control it. Well, this is it. This is your release, I guess.
And also let us know how long USB cable is to connect it to your Home Assistant instance and how you're hiding that USB cable. If you're a gamer, the Epic Game Store is now available in Home Assistant to give you calendar entries to monitor when free games and discounts are available. I like that. Give yourself a little reminder.
I've read it. I like it. I like the fact that it's called Epic. It's just Epic.
Yeah.
It's still a funny name. No, but in the end, like the first thought I had is like, why? Mm-hmm. But if you're like looking for that one game and you're awaiting it for it to be discounted, you could write an automation, right? If this game goes into a discount, please send me a notification so I can buy it. Yep. I think there's a use case for that. Monitoring free games, maybe you want to have a weekly push notification with, okay, now this game is available, go get it. But yeah, discounts, I could actually maybe see a good use case for now.
EW3 Bluetooth smart thermostats. Control them over Bluetooth.
Oh, yeah, you have a little typo made. It's EQ. EQ3 Bluetooth smart thermostats. Yeah, those have been returned. They were gone. We've removed them a few years ago, maybe. Mm. I don't know, year and a half, something. Because it used to be old Bluetooth stack. So once we've rewritten the Bluetooth stack, we had to get rid of them. There was no way to keep it running. Somebody rewrote it onto the new stack. It's back. It returned. It's now available. If you have one of those thermostats, you can turn up the heat.
There it is. Sanix, monitor water sewage levels. There we go.
Yeah.
Nice.
So you know when the shit hits the fan.
That's it. That's it. And you can alert it. You can automate it, right? You can automate against that. Or if the water level gets too high, you can turn the fans off. So it doesn't hit the fan.
Yeah, that's also a better use case.
All right. As you like to call them, the backwards incompatible changes or whatever your fancy word is for them now.
backwards incompatible changes. Yeah, I know you're not a fan. It's fine. As in, like, they're not that breaking anymore. We don't break hard. It's not back in the day, right? We're not.
I'm more annoyed that like I just automated our show notes and it's based on breaking changes. And I'm just really like the month after I automated it, you go and change your release notes to that. And I'm like, I'm not changing it, Frank. Like
I'm so sorry.
It took me so long to automate these show notes and you go along and do that. All right. The recorder component, previously recorder.purge entities. If you called it without any arguments would purge all of your entities from the recorder component. This is like the old light like turn off service or Home Assistant turn off when it would just turn off everything, right?
In case you're listening, back in the day of Home Assistant, this behavior was actually normal on every service call. So if you would call the Home Assistant dot turn on or turn off service, the generic one, right, that works on everything, and you wouldn't pass in an entity or forgot to write the entity ID and the default tools even, then it would just apply to an entity. So if you would call like Home Assistant turn off and just hit call service button, everything in your home would be turned off, like every automation, every light, every switch, everything. Because simply you forgot that. And that's such a bad pattern. And we got rid of it everywhere, except on the recorder of purge entities, apparently, which now has been fixed. So that's good.
So how do you find, like, did someone report that or did you just discover it and go, oh, we need to address that?
This just came in as a PR. It's a pull request. Somebody contributed this and we're like, okay.
Fantastic.
Yes, that's good.
All right. Open source works.
Yeah, it does.
Relative time in templates. I know there was a bit of a discussion about this. I don't know if it's going to make it. Frank, you can probably give me a bit of ideas on this one.
The backwards incompatible node probably will go away now. At this point in time, we have reversed the deprecation, which has been merged in the current beta. I need to check, but it will go in. This will probably not be there. But what happens is we had relative time, which couldn't really handle time in the future or in the past, or I'm not sure. Either
when using a template,
yes, this is a template function. So there were some discussions and we now have time since and time until to resolve that. So you have the past and the future one that does the same thing. So that would make relative time basically obsolete now. So the idea was to deprecate it. The discussion we had is to not do that because if somebody uses it in, for example, a blueprint or it's used in like an MQTT discovery message, there's nothing somebody can do about it and still get nagged by a deprecation message. So I believe the deprecation has been pulled during the weekend. I need to double check. So if I'm off, please forgive me. And if it's gone, then you know.
So I'm guessing that would mean relative time will stay and you won't get a 6 month, like it's just going to, or you're going to put as a, here's 6 months to update your calls.
Yeah, we put it in we put it in some kind of cold storage, right? It will still work, but we will not no longer document it. We have a couple of those more in Home Assistant that we just keep around forever for support. Maybe you remember the old data_template on each service call.
Yes, yeah.
And service_template on each service call. Like those still exist. They will still work because we don't want to break backwards incompatibility with automations, but you will never find them anywhere documented anymore. So it's just like, maybe this is one of those cases. But this is something we need to clarify and figure out before the release Wednesday. We're recording before this. So this is a little bit of a hard call now.
And Epson Workforce package has no longer supported. So I guess that
it
means...
has been removed from GitHub. The source is gone. Like,
what can you do? Yeah. I guess that's the issue when Home Assistant doesn't have, or the Open Home Foundation doesn't have access to the library anymore, right? Like, that's it. What can you...
No, yeah. Well, there are forks probably. But the thing is, nobody stood up and it has no users, no users according to analytics either. So how do you like test and go with this? And these are one of the things that we just remove at some point. Like, it's better to clean up. It's an old integration. It has no reported usage. The package and the source code is gone. Just clean it up. And if it returns, if somebody wants it, feel free to contribute it. We're happy to add it again in a working state. I think that's fine then.
Fantastic. Yeah. I think that is 2024.5. Frank, what was your favorite feature coming this release, if you had to pick one?
Oh, I love the data tables. Like, I know strict connections is a big thing. I think that's a good security measurement, but data tables, I absolutely love these new tables and navigating around them. So it definitely is my favorite feature to everything that touches that at this point, because I think there's still a lot of work left, but we're making great strides there. That's definitely my favorite.
Nice.
Multi-select area. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Check a couple and then a song. That's definitely my favorite.
Brilliant. Love it. Well, Frank, thank you for filling in for Rohan this week. Well, this month, I should say. Really appreciate it. thank you for all your work
at all.
Live stream. It was
thank epic. You. It was not epic game. No, yes, it was cool. Not epic games. No, it was super cool. It was super cool to do once at this level. And upcoming Wednesday, when this podcast comes out, we'll also do just the normal, plain, good, old-fashioned release party stream. That is just
no TV studios and makeup this time.
No TV studios, just me behind my desk, just like now. And we're improvising and like pretty well prepared.
No,
that like just old-fashioned.
I like it
as usual.
Really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, sweet. Thank you for having me.
No worries. Cheers.
If you want to share your Home Assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's hasspodcast.io.
The Home Assistant podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on haspodcast.io.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Catch those springtime vibes all over Arizona. break out of the winter blues by hitting the water at one of our lake and river parks. Take a hike among the wildflowers. Just make sure to stay on the trails and leave the flowers for the bees. Discover Arizona's best kept secret and visit azstateparks.com/amazing to start your springtime adventure.